Part of the richness of the liturgical life is the cycle of the saints. Today we honor another great saint, Saint Dominic, founder of the Order of Preachers. Part of why I want to mention this is because very often people follow one spirituality or another, or they belong to one school of the spiritual life or another, but the liturgical life incorporates them all. So that's why I often say, for example, like last month on the Feast of Our Lady of El Carmel, I say, well, today we're all Carmelites. A couple of days ago, we had the Feast of Saint Ignatius of Loyola, founder of the Jesuits. I said, well, that's a day when we're all students of the Ignatian spirituality. Something similar with Dominic. We're all Dominicans today. We're all participating in the grace given to the church through Saint Dominic today. So we gain the advantage of the Dominican style, which is preaching. I mean, preaching is their charism, but it's preaching based on study. It's based on a deep reflection, contemplation, and then, as Dominic would say, handing on the fruit of the contemplation. So the Dominican style of preaching is a very developed, you could say, more intellectual style. And the whole church benefits from it. So thanks be to God for Dominic. Well, let's take a look at today's readings. Today's first reading is the famous prophecy from Jeremiah. Again, Jeremiah 31, we were reading from this yesterday. The prophecy of the new covenant, a proclamation in the days of Jeremiah, so long before Jesus, centuries before Jesus, a proclamation that a new covenant, that God would make a new covenant with his people. Yesterday I was reflecting on this strange experience of having to pass through sufferings, like the Canaanite woman had to endure the Jesus' seeming rejection and delay, and how the people of God themselves throughout the Old Testament had to experience so many times persecutions, exile, just humiliation. And my reflection yesterday was that this is part of the process by which God blesses us, by which God restores us from our fallen condition. It comes back to mind in pondering this first reading as well, because Jeremiah, or the Lord through Jeremiah, says he's going to make a new covenant because the people broke the old covenant. So the new covenant will not be like the old one. They broke that law, and I had to show myself their master. So this is the condition, right? God didn't break the covenant. We did. So once a covenant is broken, what do you do? And according to the human way of thinking, well, that's the end of it. Because the injustice has already been done. How can you undo it? It's already broken. God doesn't look at it that way. He has to acknowledge the injustice. Otherwise, that would be like saying it doesn't matter whether you break it or not. It doesn't matter whether you sin or not. That's not what God says. He says, no, you broke the covenant, but that has consequences. But I'm going to make a new covenant. He's talking about something that is in the future. I will make a new covenant, and it's going to be this way. I'm going to place my law within them. I'm going to write it on their hearts, in contrast to being written on the tablets, right? Written on the heart. I will be their God, they shall be my people, everyone will know me. For I will forgive their evil doing and remember their sin no more. So God has in mind, in this prophecy, a way to both answer the demands of justice, because the covenant has been broken, and the possibility of a new beginning, a new covenant. He doesn't say how he's going to do it. He just says, I'm going to do it a new way, right down their hearts. Now, we know that the new covenant is established through the death and resurrection of Jesus. And that's the only way. Because that's the only way the full consequence of sin is treated justly. The consequence of sin is taken seriously. Sin is not trivial. It's not something that we can say it doesn't matter because God loves us and he's merciful. Yes, it does matter, but God has offered us a way to deal with the problem. That's the beauty of God's mercy, which is available to us in such extraordinary degree now that Jesus has come, laid down his life for us, and risen from the dead. So, and that new thing is not just established on stone or just something that's proclaimed like a prophecy is proclaimed. It's a grace planted in humanity now. To have that law written in our hearts is because God became man. He has a human heart that has this perfect new covenant permanently etched on it. That's why we reflected the other day in the Transfiguration. That's why when we ponder the glory of Jesus, we're also looking toward the glory of our glory, the glory of our restored humanity, because that's what God has done. It's amazing that he so blessed people who were so quick to reject his love. So that's the promise of the new covenant, but in Jeremiah's time, it's something to be, that is to be given. I'm going to do this. The days are coming when I'm going to do this. Now, when we turn to the gospel, we have another famous passage. This is the known as the confession of Peter, when Jesus asks, who do you say that I am? And Peter is the one who speaks not only for himself, but not only for the whole college of the apostles. He speaks for the whole church. He gives the right answer to the question, who is Jesus? You are the Christ, the Messiah. You are the Son of the living God. It's another indication of a launch beyond what was humanly possible. It's a breakthrough. And Jesus says that you didn't get this from flesh and blood. This was revealed to you by the Father. This comes from heaven, this awareness that the Son of the living God is in our midst. Who could know that unless it was revealed? We can't make it up. We can't figure it out. We can't make it happen. It just has to be given as a gift. And that's what Peter declares. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, okay, you got that from the Father. Then he gives Peter his role as the rock, as the keeper of the keys, and as the one who has authority in heaven and on earth. So this is all promise to the church, things that God will give to Peter once he establishes the new covenant, right? This all happens before the new covenant, so before the death and resurrection of Jesus. So these things are said with as kind of a preparation for the actual accomplishment of it. I had to wonder, did this event happen before the Transfiguration or after it? Because we just celebrated the Transfiguration 2 days ago, and Peter is one of the three who saw Jesus in glory. You could say, well, if he had seen that, of course he could say, well, I know who you are. You're Son of God. And I heard the voice from heaven say, you're Son of God. But it didn't happen that way. This happened before the Transfiguration. So it's not that Peter figured it out because he heard the voice. He was given an inspiration. And then, according to Matthew's gospel, 6 days later, Jesus took the three of them up the high mountain. So since Peter already knew, even though he probably didn't know what it meant, but he knew that Jesus was the Messiah, when he has this experience on the mountain, it confirms what that grace he had already received. Anyway, I want to skip down to this last part of the gospel because it's connected to this idea of the broken covenant and the new covenant, this human condition and this divine restoration. I'm talking about where Jesus makes his prophecy of his own passion. Actually, the very thing I'm saying, this the way of establishing the new covenant is going to be persecuted, it's going to be killed, and on the third day be raised. That's the heart of our whole faith. And Peter's response to that is, no, that should never happen. That should never happen. another, it's like saying, I don't want the new covenant. I don't want that. I think that's a bad idea. You can see why Jesus' reaction to him is so harsh. Like, you can't reject the new covenant. This is the only way out of the sin condition. You can't reject the central mission of the Messiah that you just declared is in our midst. Get behind me, Satan. That's an obstacle. Don't even think like that. You're thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. You're going back to the condition of the human family after the old covenant was broken and the new one had not yet been established. You're stuck there if you're going to rely on your own human thinking. So don't do that. But what's revealed here is these two things. The human condition is broken, damaged, defiled. And our natural tendency is to think like Peter. That should never happen. Suffering shouldn't happen. Bad things shouldn't happen. We shouldn't have to suffer anything. In fact, we should be able to relax and have a good time all our life and then go to heaven. That's how our nature thinks. So don't put any demands on me. Don't have any expectations. Don't give me any responsibilities. Just put me on the beach with some good food and drinks. That's heaven. Then I'll wait until I go to heaven. Well, that's the way human beings think. That's not how God thinks. The way God thinks is I have to deal with the sin problem. And I am dealing with it. I'm offering restoration. I'm offering this new covenant to everybody. But if you keep thinking that way, you're only going to be an obstacle to it. So what Peter experienced in this profound gospel of being inspired on the one hand and being an obstacle on the other hand is actually true of all of us. We have the Word of God. We have the sacraments. We have the fullness of the faith offered to us. We have the saints, St. Dominic. We have so much just given to us, not because we deserve it, but because God's so generous and merciful. And yet we also have this nature which we have concupiscence, to use a word the Dominicans love. We have concupiscence. It's a technical term that means we have this tendency to sin. Okay, what do? We do not rely on ourselves or on the way human beings think. We rely on God, on grace, on mercy, on the power of the new covenant written on our hearts from baptism and renewed again and again through the sacraments. And this is what gives us confidence, hope, joy, that yes, we're a messed up people in a messed up world, but we're also redeemed. And we can look forward to heaven. Thanks be to God.